Hello, I'm Michael Perez. This is number 0490, the Stump File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stump File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stump File program, number 0490. And coming up on this edition of the Stump File program, you'll meet DeMond Wilson, best known as Lamont on Sanford and Son, as he talks about his life and career. He and Red Fox always got along.
Red and I never had an acrimonious relationship. We never said an unkind word to one another. We never got into an argument. You know, there were times when he would get mad at me because I would goof on him and hit a nerve. But, you know, the bittersweet had to do more with the people that put the show on.
Nancy L. Dennison, author of Create a New Reality, on her near-death experience and her visit to the afterlife.
While I was in the afterlife, I got reams and reams of information, including the answers to my questions, you know, who am I, who is God, what's the purpose of life, why am I on earth, where's heaven, where's hell, and what's the one true religion. And when I got the answers and then lived the information that I obtained while I was in the afterlife, I realized that I don't need a religion anymore because religion's based on belief. I had actual experience.
And there's lots and lots of Stump File news and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later. The person who told you this was show number 0490 was Michael Perez, a serial tech entrepreneur, software engineer, mathematician, and radio host, originally from Montreal, now living in Santa Monica, California. He operates a web development and cloud hosting company. He's also working on a web series called Travelpreneurs, Breaking the 9-to-5, which provides a complete guide on how to efficiently travel the world while making money. Maybe we should have him as a guest on the show. I'll work on that. In the meantime, you can find out more information by going to his website. You'll find the link to his website on our website at thestufffile.com. Just go to the show number for this program, which you just heard Michael say. See how it all comes around full circle? And you'll find the link. Thank you very much, Michael, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stump File program, a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make the show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff. 42-year-old Karen Kahenny of Barnsley, South Yorkshire, England, is a heavy smoker, puffing on 60 to 80 cigarettes a day. But as she watches TV in the evening, Kahenny also eats 8 cigarette butts. And as a side dish, she eats about 9 ounces of chalk every week. Her odd addictions are related to pica, she told the British tabloid The Mirror, a condition that involves eating things that aren't really food. I have no idea what triggered it, she said. It isn't so much the taste of the cigarette butts or the chalk that I like. It's more the texture and the crunch. When she runs out of either item, she says, I get quite agitated and my mouth begins to water. Kahenny hasn't consulted a doctor about her addiction, claiming she is too embarrassed. But she has discovered a Facebook page for others who suffer from pica. It makes me feel like less of a weirdo. Less like I'm going mad, Kahenny said. Okay, wait a minute. She's too embarrassed to go to a doctor about her weird little habit, but she has no problem telling her story to the London Daily Mirror. Yeah, I think her talking to the press is a sign that she has indeed gone mad. On the bright side, she's the one person who can definitely understand the difference between chalk and cheese. The Daily Mail reported on December 14th that a Chinese man identified only as 37-year-old Peng was hospitalized in Jiangsu, Fujian province, after he complained of a cough and chest pains. As doctors examined him, Peng admitted that he has been addicted to smelling his socks, the socks that he had been wearing. The pain in his chest, it turns out, was a fungal infection he had inhaled from his socks. While Peng is expected to make a full recovery, other people fessed up on Chinese social media that they too have the same habit. The reason I smell my socks is to know if I can continue wearing them the next day, one commenter said. Another pledged to wash my socks every day now. Okay, I think there's a difference between taking a quick sniff to see how they smell, as opposed to burying your nose into them to soak up whatever funky aroma they might contain. This is a guy who should only be allowed to wear sandals. But then again, that could create another problem. 66-year-old Rick Antosh, a retired hospitality executive from Edgewater, New Jersey, was enjoying a plate of oysters at Grand Central's Oyster Bar in New York City when he felt something hard in his mouth. I just all of a sudden felt something like a tooth or a filling, and it's terrifying, Antosh said. But when he looked at it, he realized it was a pearl. Antosh called over the floor manager to ask how often such a discovery happens and was told he's never heard of it before. Antosh has not had the pearl appraised, but early estimates say it could be worth $2,000 to $4,000. I'm guessing now that restaurant is suddenly way busier than it was before. In Mesa, Arizona, diverging tastes in music led to a fatality on December 14th. Officers responded to a call of shots fired at an apartment complex where 41-year-old Sheldon Sturgill told them he shot his roommate after an argument and fistfight over the type of music they were listening to. Sturgill and his roommate had been drinking shots of beer before the altercation. He was held on suspicion of second-degree murder. It is unclear what the offensive music choice was. Well, let's just hope, for Sheldon's sake, it isn't the same type of music they pipe into prison cells. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, calling it a dangerous case of mistaken identity, a 27-year-old man was shot at multiple times on December 16th after being mistaken for Bigfoot. The unidentified man told police he was setting up targets for shooting on federal land when bullets struck the ground nearby. He ran for cover, then confronted the shooter, who said the first man was not wearing orange and thought he was Bigfoot. This according to Lewis and Clark County Sheriff Leo Dutton. The cryptid impersonator described the shooter's vehicle to police, but didn't want to press charges, asking only that the shooter be lectured about safe shooting. Okay, I'm assuming you fine folks out there have the same two questions I have. One, how nearsighted was that shooter? And two, how hairy was his suspected target? Yikes. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Those of us who grew up in the 70s definitely remember DeMond Wilson. He is a television icon, best known for his role as Lamont in the 1970s sitcom Sanford and Son, where he starred opposite Red Fox. He's also the author of Second Banana, the bittersweet memoirs of Sanford and Son. DeMond joins us on the line right now from California. Hi, DeMond.
Hello there. How are you? You forgot my first book, The New Age Millennium.
The New Age Millennium.
Yes, an expose of symbols, slogans, and hidden agendas.
Wow. Interesting stuff. Now,
well, I wrote that 20 years ago. I was one of the forerunners for the conspiracy theorist people. And 80% of the things that I said in the book that were 20 years away are happening today. I've not heard one person call me and say, yo, DeMond, we apologize for calling you a conspiracy theorist. You're absolutely freaking right.
Now, I want to talk a little bit about your book, the Second Banana, and the reason is I want to touch on the subtitle of the book, The Bittersweet Memories of Sanford and Son. Why were they bittersweet?
Memoirs, rather.
The Bittersweet Memoirs of Sanford and Son. Why are they bittersweet?
Let me ask you a question. I know judges always say I don't answer questions, I ask them.
Yes.
Are you married?
No, I'm not.
Were you ever married?
No, I have not been.
Did you ever have a love interest in your life?
Doesn't everyone?
No, I'm asking the questions. Now you have to answer them, and then I'm going to tell you. If you have had a relationship, even with your mother and father, which I presume you had.
Yes.
Was it all sweet?
Oh, gosh, no.
Was it all bitter?
No,
so
it wasn't all bitter.
One could say that it was a bittersweet experience, couldn't one?
One could. Yes, Your Honor.
That's your answer.
And I'm glad you say that because, you know, I've often found it interesting, especially in with entertainment media, that people always want to put their own spin on the relationships of those they watch on television as if those characters or those actors are real families, are real people who spend all their working time with each other. And in reality, they're just working relationships. And you don't spend each and every day with everyone you go to work with in the normal walk of life. So why would one expect that to happen in the entertainment field?
Well, I hope that people don't take that the wrong way, because Red and I never had an acrimonious relationship. We never said an unkind word to one another. We never got into an argument. You know, there were times when he would get mad at me because I would goof on him and hit a nerve. But, you know, the bittersweet had to do more with the people that put the show on. Because, you know, you can't have people say, you know, I watched Sanford and Son and I'm still watching it, and you guys were a great team. Well, you can't act that if there is no synergy between the protagonists. You have nothing. You have actors standing there. I don't mean any disrespect, but that's why the new Odd Couple on ABC with Ron Glass and myself didn't work, because there was no synergy. He didn't like me, and I had no feelings about him, God rest his soul. But Red and I was a unique situation, that it was a love fest, and that's what people are seeing. What you see on that small screen and with Red Fox and Damon Wilson, Fred and Lamont, is what our personal relationship was. There was no difference. People would come on the set and they say, dang, are you guys rehearsing? I said, no. Well, you're relating to each other like the characters. I said, because that's who we are.
Well, it's interesting that you bring up the new Odd Couple, because I was just talking to a friend of mine just a few moments ago, a little while ago, earlier, when I said I was going to be talking to you. And we were both on the agreement as we don't understand why that show didn't work, because we thought that was perfect casting. But now you're saying that it was not necessarily that way.
Well, you know, first of all, Penny Marshall, God rest his soul, was an acquaintance of mine. We were at Paramount, same time together. I was doing Odd Couple. She was Laverne and Shirley. I had worked with her ex-husband many years ago on the family, Robbie Reiner, and Gary Marshall was a friend of mine. And he called me up. He said, Damon, I want you to know that you and Ron Glass are not my first choice. My first choice was Bill Cosby and Flip Wilson, but Cosby came in my office, put his feet up on the desk, threw his Vegas contract up there, lit a cigar and said, match it. And he said, I can't. Come on, Bill, stop it. So he said, my second choice was you and Ronnie. Now, Ronnie made his television debut on Sanford and Son. And I knew, like myself, that he was from the theater in Minneapolis, the Guthrie Theater. And just before we went on the air, I also knew that he had never done television. So I said, now, Ronnie, this is a live audience out there, and they're carnivores. So, you know, get out there and do it. Do what I know you can. And he held that grudge against me all the way through the end of my show with that, and all the way through Barney Miller. And then one day on the set, he said, you know, I don't like you because of what you said to me backstage when I did Sanford and Son. It frightened the bejesus out of me. And I thought, what? You know, so it wasn't the producers. It wasn't the ratings. Ron thought that show made him look gay. And everybody went, oh, well. The character's not making you look gay, because I guess you might have been able to interpret that for Tony Randall, but you sure couldn't interpret that way for Jack Lemmon.
Right.
So, you know, the character didn't make you look gay. I mean, that's how you're coming off, Ron. So he didn't want to work with me. He didn't like me. He was terrified of me. The directors would say, DeMond is going to steal every scene from you. He does it every show, Ron. So, and that would just drive him crazy. He was a nervous Nelly anyway. And they would say that to try and motivate him to get out there and slug it out with me. But he never would. And it was the perfect opportunity for us to take that someplace else. I personally think it was one of my best works that I did on all three, four of the shows that I did. I didn't particularly like Baby, I'm Back, the scripts that they were writing. I loved Denise. I knew Denise back. We come from the theater together in New York. But Ronnie just, you know, said, this makes me look gay. And everybody went, oh, well. Don't know how a part could make you look gay. And I did Boys in the Band on Broadway. I've been married 45 years. I have six adult progeny. You can't say adult children. That's an oxymoron, isn't it?
Well, nowadays, there's so much streaming going on. I think it's a kind of a new golden age of television. It's just not necessarily network. Have you looked at
There is no network now. The borders, yeah. The boundaries are. There are no networks anymore. I mean, there's no. You used to have to go to ABC, CBS, and NBC. I did shows on all three of them, and the stuff that I'm doing now, we're gonna put it immediately into syndication. You know, I have a game show that I've written, and we have the contacts. We're putting it right into syndication, you know, and it's going to break all over the place. And then I'm writing a thing that I had in mind for, I wrote it in mind for Halle Berry, but I don't think that she's the physical type for it. Let me say that. She certainly can, she has chops. She can carry her own, but physically she's not, you know, it would be like putting a bantamweight or a light featherweight in the ring with a cruiserweight, you know.
Right.
the bantamweight would get his brains knocked out. So the networks are every place now. You got Hulu, Voodoo, Scoodoo, Sleeboo, Boo-Boo, Knock News, Snick News. I got all of them. I say my kids came down to the desert last weekend for their mother's birthday and brought us a brand new 60-inch TV. I said, what's wrong with the one we got? They said, Daddy, you know, this one is the technology. I went, oh, yeah. And then they gave me this sound bar, this long thing, the Sonos. And we had Sonos speakers. And now when we watch a movie in the great room, it sounds like I'm in a theater. I go, what the? The dog goes nuts. What is this?
So besides all the writing you're doing, when will we see DeMond Wilson on the screen again?
Hopefully never. I get offered all kinds of stuff. You know, I'm 72 years young. I look like I'm maybe 50. But I don't have any desire. First of all, I have a very, very illustrious, I've led a very illustrious life. It's not over. But a lot of the things that I'm looking at in the rearview mirror, I'm sure there's things up ahead. Only my creator knows that. But I could not play a role. They could not write a role for me that would be as exciting as the life I've lived. So I'd be doing step-down stuff. And I get offered that all the time. My PR agent, Mark, he said, DeMond, half of this crap, I don't even show you. I said, there was this one guy that was dogging me to play this role of a guy who abandoned his family, not like Ray Ellis. Ray Ellis on my series, he left because they were going to kill him and his family if he hung around, so that's why he split. But they wanted me to do that deadbeat black guy, which would further perpetuate the image that all black men leave their families and they're no good. I've spent 45 years in a marriage raising six kids, and so I said, I'm not gonna, well, you know, you'd be acting. I said, I'm not gonna do it. And then my friend up in Philly has written a story about the NAACP president back in the 70s in Philadelphia, Moore, and he wanted me to play the Judas goat. And I said, I said, I'm not doing it. The lady at CBS said, why is DeMond an actor? Why doesn't he want to do this? She said, because he's not going to play the Judas goat. I said, ask her if she ever saw Jesus Christ Superstar with Ted Neely. It was a black guy on there named Carl Anderson.
who married Muhammad Ali's ex-wife, the pretty one. He was a jazz singer, and his mistake that killed his career, he played Judas Iscariot on Broadway and then did the movie. I said, you know, no, I can't do that. I said, why? I said, he's a man of integrity. He's not. Well, I'm not going to do it. And all these roles they're offering me, I got to go MF and GD and F. I'm looking at this new thing that Ernie Hudson, an old friend of mine, is doing on BET, The Family. And they're murdering each other and killing each other. And he sent his daughter to school to become a hitman. And they're all whores. And I can't. The whole thing has changed.
But you're also a writer. So why not write the role that you think Damon Wilson should play?
I can't. Nobody would believe it. I grew up in Harlem. I was in the theater as a kid. I went to college. I dropped out for a semester to do a play at the Arena Stage Theater in Washington, D.C. This is circa 66. My mother called me, said, I think you need to come home. I got on the bus, went back to Manhattan. There was the letter. Your friends and neighbors have selected you. They shipped my black butt off to Vietnam. I'm a decorated Sergeant E5, U.S. 5161-2294. Decorated Vietnam veteran. I come home from Vietnam. I'm walking down the street. Joe Papp sees me, said, I've been looking for you. Where you been? I said, been in the war, fool. He said, come on down to the theater. I got something for you. I went from that to another thing, to a Broadway play, to another Broadway play. Walter Mirisch came to New York, saw me in a play at the New York Shakespeare Theater, and cast me in a Sidney Poitier film. I came to California. I mean, I met my wife. Somebody said, how'd you meet your wife? I said, I opened my wallet. I met my wife and six kids. Boop, 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 boop. and then I moved out and left show business, was tired of it, didn't want Hollywood anymore. And there was always a call on my life. And I became a minister. I ministered around the world for 18 years in front of huge, huge audiences. People would say to me, don't you miss being in front of an audience? I go, no, I don't, because I do it every other night. I've written two books, three series. This is my third screenplay. And I am a low-index golfer.
And that's why I said in the introduction that you're also a television icon, because you have done so much and people could learn so much from all that you have done. Damon, it's a pleasure to have had the chance to talk with you. I thank you very much for being on the program with us.
I thank you for having me on the program with you.
Actor Damon Wilson, a television icon who is also a producer and writer. Again, his book is Second Banana, The Bittersweet Memoirs of Sanford and Son. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0490, and you'll find links to Damon's website where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like. But the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. Here's a penny for your thoughts from the Stuff File program coming to you from Montreal, Canada. A country that doesn't have pennies.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about visiting the afterlife. Plus, we do indeed have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on. And more Stuff File news here on the Stuff File program, a show that is heard everywhere, including on Stitcher and TuneIn, and can also be heard via Google Play and iTunes. Just click on the Google Play or iTunes button located on the website at thestufffile.com. And whichever platform you listen to the program on, please feel free to leave a review of the show on their site. That would be greatly appreciated. Well, back to the Stuff File news. A woman in Palm Beach County, Florida, was arrested for allegedly assaulting her parents when they refused to take her to an Outback restaurant. Dina Seltzer, who is 28, I repeat, 28 years old, was charged with domestic battery, battery on a person 65 years of age or older, and aggravated battery with a deadly weapon. The victim's mother told police that Seltzer asked to go to the Outback. When the mother said no, that's when Seltzer became enraged and began punching her chest and arms. Police said Seltzer's father tried to break up the fight, and she began assaulting him. He received scratches to his face and upper body. Officials said Seltzer then began running around the home and flipped over a large glass table, recliners, and other pieces of furniture. She then ripped a 12-inch decorative knife off the wall and ran toward her father while screaming, "I'm going to bleeping kill you!" He was able to grab her arm and wrestle the knife from her. Police arrived on the scene and set up a perimeter around the house. Seltzer eventually ran out of the home and was taken into custody. Okay, one has to ask the obvious question. At 28 years old, couldn't Dina take herself to Outback? It's going to be a while before she enjoys any of their big meals. You know, their really big meals.
18-ounce center cut sirloin kind of big. Aussie Bloom big. Boomerang beer flights big. Six-layer chocolate cake and ultimate great barrier combo big. Our biggest entrees ever. Hurry in now. Outback Steakhouse. Aussie rules.
Maybe Dina took the hurry now a little too much to heart. A police officer spotted a man leaving a Westwood, Ohio Walmart with allegedly stolen merchandise in his backpack. When the officer confronted the man, later identified as 24-year-old Jeremy Roberts, he ran. The officer attempted to use a taser to stop him to no avail. At this point, Mr. Roberts made what can only be described as a tactical error, according to police on their Facebook page, and ran directly to the rear of the Cincinnati Police Department. The department's District 3 station is located just south of Walmart. Roberts was greeted by numerous officers who charged him with theft and obstructing official business. Really? Obstructing official business? Sounds like he was kind of helpful. I mean, the police station should just have a sign that says deliveries in back. Yeah. Meanwhile, the owner of a hotel in Britain said he replaced the room's Bibles with copies of 50 Shades of Grey to reflect the modern secular society. Jonathan Denby, owner of the Damson Den Hotel in Crosthwaite, England, said he decided to replace the Bibles with copies of E.L. James's erotic novel because he decided the Bibles were wholly inappropriate for bedrooms in a secular society. "I was thinking originally of putting in a book by Ayn Rand, Atlas Shrugged. That was my first choice," Denby said. "But because everybody is reading 50 Shades of Grey, we thought it would be a hospitable thing to do, to have this available for our guests, especially if some of them were a little bit shy about buying it because of its reputation." The Reverend Michael Woodcock, oh, there's an unfortunate name, who oversees services at St. Mary's Parish Church, said he was dismayed by the hotelier's decision. "It is a great shame that Bibles have been removed from rooms and very inappropriate to have been replaced by an explicit erotic novel," he said. "The Bible remains a source of comfort and inspiration that many people do find helpful." Interesting how Denby said he put 50 Shades of Grey in the rooms because everybody's reading it. Don't you think it would have been more prudent to put in a book that many people haven't read? Oops. We're back to the Bible again, aren't we? Yeah. Tulsa County prosecutors say a massage parlor in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma, run by 55-year-old Walter Brazington Jr., was actually a front for a house of prostitution. Wow, that's never happened in history, huh? The operation was discovered when a classified ad was posted seeking massage therapists, listing Brazington's home phone number. After conducting surveillance, undercover officers responded to an ad and found that the job entailed more than just massages. The number posted in the ad was also the same one used for his other work. Brazington is listed as an apostle and prophet for the preaching group All Nations Evangelistic Team. According to the group, Brazington has established 4 churches and 3 schools. He was arrested, charged with procuring for prostitution and possession of a firearm while in the commission of a felony, and released on $6,000 bail. Well, this is one way to combine the Bible with 50 Shades of Grey. The Lord does work in mysterious ways. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? What happens to us when we die? That's a question that a lot of people contemplate. But what if you could actually get an answer? Nancy L. Dannison is a lawyer who claims she died while having an invasive radiological procedure before a surgery, plunging her further into the afterlife than previously thought survivable. Since then, she has written about her experience. Her latest book, which is her 5th, is Create a New Reality, Move Beyond Law of Attraction Theory. Nancy joins us on the line right now from Columbus, Ohio. Hi, Nancy.
Good morning and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too. Thank you very much for being on the program with us. So about this experience, first of all, I want to ask, how religious were you before, and has your spirituality changed since this experience you had?
I had 12 years of Catholic education, 6 years of Methodist college, and regularly attended Mass before I died. While I was in the afterlife, I got reams and reams of information, including the answers to my questions, you know, who am I, who is God, what's the purpose of life, why am I on earth, where's heaven, where's hell, and what's the one true religion. And when I got the answers and then lived the information that I obtained while I was in the afterlife, I realized that I don't need a religion anymore, because religion's based on belief. I had actual experience. I experienced our Creator.
Now, you, as I said in the introduction, you're a lawyer, so you're a person with an analytical mind. What was the thought process when you experienced this, and when you came back? Did you think it was a dream? Do you think it was a hallucination? How did you go through the process of understanding what it is you had experienced?
It really wasn't difficult, because that information was built in. While I was in the afterlife, I was told, this is the afterlife. This is what people call heaven. This is the process that we all go through when we get out of body at the end of the body's life. And this is who you really are. So I didn't have to figure anything out. What I did have to do, as I'm sure you can imagine, was try to reconcile what I experienced with what I'd always believed from my religion.
So how did that differ exactly?
In every way, in every conceivable way. Everything I'd learned as in Catholic schools, and everything I read in the Bible, and in taking religion classes, all was revealed to me as good faith but human attempts to understand our Creator, you know, the entity that we call God or Allah or Yahweh, but that it was primarily superstition and myth. The biggest myth of all being that we are separate from our Creator, and that we've been cast onto earth with the task of earning our way back to heaven by performing good deeds and following certain rules. I learned while I was literally merged into and aware and awake as part of Source, what I call our Creator, that we are literally parts of God's, Source's, self-consciousness, self-awareness, its beingness, its personality. We have been blanketed with amnesia so that we can go into the physical environment of the universe that Source also holds in its mind, and experience it in a way that feels real to us.
So let's go back to the actual experience. As I mentioned in the introduction, you were having an invasive radiological procedure that was done before surgery. How long, and you refer to it as you had died, how long were you, quote-unquote, dead? And what was your first recollection when you came back?
I don't know for sure how long I was dead, because I was by myself. but based upon reviewing my medical records and what the radiologist and technician told me, we're guessing about 10 to 15 minutes.
Okay.
And my first recollection, I didn't have any recollection. Well, while I was being sent back into my body, I was trying to memorize as much as I could about what I learned in the afterlife. And so that's what I was trying to cling to. And when I first was able to use this mouth to speak, I said, I passed out. And then they started working on me, taking my blood pressure and such.
And once you, upon your return, you're now sharing this story with everybody. You've written 5 books. Was it difficult for you to get people to understand or even believe what you had experienced?
It kind of depends on the audience. You know, there are millions of people who have had afterlife experiences and returned to their bodies, or have been out of body and returned to their body. So those people, you know, really start out on the same page with me. But, and if other people don't understand or it doesn't resonate with them, that's not my mission. You know, the mission I undertook when I came back here was to tell as many people as would listen what I experienced and what I learned, to help try to bring comfort to their lives. I'm not looking for followers. You know, people can take it or leave it.
What about the theory of reincarnation? Did you learn anything about that? Does it exist?
Yes. My Catholic faith, you know, never acknowledged reincarnation. But while I was in the afterlife, I actually remembered hundreds and hundreds of physical lifetimes I'd lived all throughout the universe. There's all kinds of creatures and things and, you know, what we would call aliens and plants and rocks. And I remember being a gaseous cloud of something with intelligence and awareness at one place in the universe. So I saw that reincarnation was real. And then I was given a download of information about it, and how we have the choice of whether to incarnate or not, and how we make our decisions in that regard.
Someone going through a near-death experience similar to yours, I'm sure you could understand how it could affect different people differently. Some people might find it a very positive experience and have a greater understanding of the journey one's life or lives can take. Some people might turn inward and go, what's the point of all this? Have you met people in your journeys who have gone through this experience, who have had a different reaction to the more positive outlook that you have?
Yes. Not only near-death experiencers, but a lot of my readers will write to me. They particularly don't like the idea that Source, our Creator, does not judge us. That everything we do in human life is within the ballpark of what is expected for us. And they don't like the idea that people aren't going to be punished for what they do in human life. So that, I think those people have turned inward and said, you know, what's the point of all this? If I don't have to be good in order to get into heaven, why should I be? Go ahead.
And with your books, like Create a New Reality, who are you trying to reach?
I am trying to reach people who are suffering, because I learned in the afterlife that human life is basically the product of two powerful engines designed by our Creator. One is animal biology, and the other is manifesting physical reality. And I learned that we can improve both engines' performance by using our spiritual power that is called manifesting. We can literally heal ourselves. We can literally improve our physical condition. We can literally create new experiences, new events, a new course in our lives if we harness and consciously use our manifesting power. Otherwise, we continue to manifest unconsciously based upon our most deeply and truly believed concepts of who we are and what our purpose is and our place in this life.
We're talking with Nancy L. Dannison about the afterlife. Her latest book is Create a New Reality, Move Beyond Law of Attraction Theory. We'll take a quick break and continue our conversation on the other side. No pun intended. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. I'd like to tell you about a canal in my hometown of Cadillac, Michigan, that was once featured on Ripley's Believe It or Not. The canal connects two lakes, and when the temperature falls to freezing, it covers over with ice before the lakes do. However, it thaws out after the lakes finally freeze over, and it stays unfrozen all winter. Snowmobilers on the lake would sometimes get hurt by driving into the open canal. So, to prevent injuries, each winter volunteers built a temporary fence on the ice where the lakes opened to the canal. They did this for many years. Then, something really strange happened, but it wasn't reported on the Ripley TV show. The volunteers stopped building the fence, even though it was still needed for safety. Why? Because they were told they could be sued if it blew away and a snowmobiler got hurt. Let's be fair, this is just one more example of how the constant threat of being sued in America puts public safety at risk. Learn more about how excessive litigation affects all of us by visiting our website at centerforamericatv.org.
Actors, authors, quirky guests, and the common folk. It all comes to you here on the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we do indeed have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on, and maybe one or two more Stuff File news stories to share with you here on a program that is also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. But right now, we're going to continue our chat with Nancy L. Dannison about the afterlife. Her latest book is Create a New Reality, Move Beyond Law of Attraction Theory. Now, Nancy, in your experience, you say that you learn that whatever supreme being is out there doesn't judge. So, having said that, and having a life where you were religious growing up, do you better understand why and how the various religions came to the conclusions that they have, and why?
I was actually shown a documentary vision or film in the afterlife of the creation of Earth and the development of humans and how religions developed and why they developed and how they got to be the way they are and what they're going to be in the future. So I was shown that information and given that understanding. And at the same time, there was kind of like an over voice, you know, explaining it all to me. And I put the content of that documentary vision into my third book called Backwards Beliefs to explain, you know, what I saw, what I remember seeing.
So I'm going on the assumption then that you and various religious groups, be it highly organized or not, don't necessarily see eye to eye or get along.
I get some emails and some comments on YouTube from Christians who do not appreciate what I'm saying. So I think that's true, Peter.
but that's talking about the flock to start with, the various flocks. What about theologians themselves? Have you had debates with them? Have you had discussions with them? What do they say?
No one in the religious world has ever talked to me about any of this, except my dear friend who's an Episcopalian priest.
She's okay with it. So they're okay with it.
Well, just this one person. I don't know how everybody else is.
Because I think it would be a rather interesting situation. Again, I go back to the fact that you're a trained lawyer. I would find it interesting to see you debating various scholars of various religions, be it Christianity, Judaism, Hinduism, and see who agrees with you or who wants to debate some of the issues you're talking about and where you come together. I think that would be fascinating.
I think it would be brutal for me and for them too. You know, one of the things I learned in the afterlife is that whatever our perspective is at the time is right for us at that time. We always have the option of changing, of improving, of being enlightened. And it's not kind, in my opinion, to take away someone's beliefs, because that's what happened to me. You know, I felt like all my beliefs, everything I ever thought about myself and believed about life was taken away from me in the afterlife, is replaced by something far more simple and beautiful and loving. but I still had that grieving, you know, the loss of what I believed. And so I don't really try to do that to other people.
Well, and that's why I say theologians, because when you talk about it being brutal, I think of that as a situation when you're dealing with the flock, when you're dealing with the followers. But those who are scholars, I think to a certain degree, just the fact that they are scholars, they're a little more open to the idea of interpretation before they pass any kind of judgment or theory of their own, as opposed to the flock who, this is the way it is, no ifs, ands, or buts.
Could be. I don't know.
So how has it changed, besides your spirituality, how has this experience changed you as a person on a day-to-day level? You know, as you're a lawyer, how has it changed your outlook on other things, not dealing with spirituality, but just general life?
Well, as I said, I had all my beliefs torn away from me. So I spent the first 2 years after I returned to my body grieving. I wanted to go home. You know, I wanted to go back home. Everything about my life changed. You know, I had been a hard-driving, money-grubbing, competitive, you know, stick-it-to-em, nose-to-the-grindstone attorney before I died. And when I came back, I was more like a cream puff. So I left my law firm. I had been a partner in a 270-attorney law firm and went out on my own as a solo practitioner and did my best to try to heal and to reconcile and come to grips with what I had experienced.
I want to go back to the reincarnation aspect once again. You mentioned the fact that your previous lives, in our current life, we know nothing about our previous lives. But you, in the afterlife, learned about all of yours. Is there a connection? Is there a link to our previous lives that we're not aware of in our day-to-day living? Or are they all random and your, you know, my current life has nothing to do with any of my previous lives?
Both. I learned in the afterlife that the purpose of life is we pick a theme to understand. Like we pick something about the creature we want to incarnate into. So let's say humans. And we pick a unique trait, like humans are one of the few species that turn on their own kind. So we might incarnate into life after life after life after life to study that phenomenon of turning on your own kind as the victim, as the perpetrator, as the observer, as the mother, as the father, as the scholar, as the teacher. You know, every conceivable type of experience you could have around that theme. So while our lives at the human level have nothing to do with one another, at the spiritual level, they're all connected by this theme that we're studying.
Would you say you're more at peace generally now than you were before this experience?
Oh, yes. Much more.
And
it was a blessing, too, because, Peter, I have stage 3 metastatic cancer.
Wow.
And what I experience in the afterlife has, and my readers, oh my gosh, my wonderful readers have gotten me through this and through the healing process. I'm now in remission and doing great.
Did you fear death before? And if so, do you no longer fear death?
I did fear death. I no longer fear death, but I'm not real fond of dying. I've done it 4 or 5 times. It's not fun, and it's not good for your health. Well, you know, I got a lot of body damage from, you know, lack of oxygen and other, you know, consequences of being dead.
So what do you say for people, again, like I say, people can go either way on this after experiencing something like this or thinking about the experience of this. What do you say to people who say, what's the point to life?
Point to life, as I learned it, is we're supposed to be having fun. Like our Creator created the incarnation process and gave us the ability to, you know, come into humans and live human lives. It was supposed to be interesting and fun and rewarding. And humans themselves have turned this incarnation experience into something that causes a lot of suffering. And, you know, I totally understand people who say to themselves, well, what's the point of life? Because they're suffering. And that's why I wrote this book, Create a New Reality, because it gives you the tools to change that life of suffering, to take control, to literally create a new physical reality that your body and you live together going forward.
Well, it's a fascinating topic, a fascinating book. The book is called Create a New Reality, Move Beyond Law of Attraction Theory. Nancy, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
I appreciate so much the opportunity.
That's Nancy L. Dannison, author of Create a New Reality, Move Beyond Law of Attraction Theory. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com to the page for this show, which is show number 0490. And you'll find links to Nancy's website and also links to Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order her book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. We still have an idiot of the day coming your way in just a matter of moments, but I've got a few more Stuff File news stories that I want to share with you right here, right now, on a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. 52-year-old Robert Somley, a landscaper in Monroe, Connecticut, was working at a house with a 48-year-old woman when Somley said he needed to take a break. When he wasn't back after 20 minutes, the unnamed woman went looking for him and told police she found him in the house completely undressed and watching adult video on a laptop computer. She went back outside but decided she needed a break too and went back in. And then it gets weird. She says Somley was now dribbling maple syrup on his body. She decided that this was a turn-on and demanded to participate. So why was the woman talking to police? Because he allegedly took video of the tryst and the woman said he refused to delete it. Somley was arrested on several charges, including voyeurism and violating a restraining order for allegedly threatening to name the woman who actually is married. Yes, he was going to name her in public. Well, let's hope she doesn't think a restraining order is a turn-on too. Okay, so she walks in and sees him dribbling maple syrup on his body, and for her, this is a turn-on. You know, that's not that far-fetched. I mean, if you've ever seen the movie 9½ Weeks, you know what I'm talking about. Also, I distinctly remember in my teenage years wanting to go steady with the Honey album cover by the Ohio Players. For those of you who are old enough to remember it, you know what I mean. For those of you who are not, Google it. According to Collier County, Florida sheriff's deputies, Lita Chrysostomo tried to get away on a tricycle. She's 52, and it didn't work. Well, if at first you don't succeed, trike again. Anyway, deputies accused her of using a gun to menace a jogger and to stop a postal truck to steal from it. She only took one package, and the gun wasn't real, but she faces charges of aggravated assault and armed robbery. During her arrest, she protested that voices were telling her to do things. That's according to the sheriff's office. Oh, and she said something else, too. She said, she's God. Yeah. You know, if you claim to really be God, then you wouldn't be obeying random voices, would you? Clearly, it's time for Lita to get a checkup from the neck up. Anyway, boys and girls, it's that moment you've all been waiting for. It's time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
A Bob Marley hat helped police nab a man suspected of robbing a Dollar Tree in Roseville, Minnesota on Christmas Eve. 39-year-old Quincy Gerard Petty also reportedly forgot to put his mask on when he first walked into the retailer and told an employee at the register that he wasn't playing. "Open your register. I'm robbing you," Petty reportedly said. He later reached under his sweatshirt near his waistband and yelled, "If you put your hands down, y'all done." A store employee recognized Petty as the boyfriend of another employee. When he saw the man look at him, Petty remembered his mask and pulled it over his face. Another man accompanied Petty during the robbery. They took off with about $2,000 after store managers emptied the safe. And then the two robbers fled in a red SUV. Police tracked down a vehicle matching the description to a location near Petty's girlfriend's home. He and his girlfriend were found outside her residence, and Petty was arrested. While he had changed his clothes, he was wearing the same Bob Marley hat that store employees reported seeing on the suspect. Officers also found a crumpled envelope with the word robbery written on it inside Petty's pockets, along with two coin wrapping papers and more than $600 in cash, mostly in $1 bills. Petty denied involvement in the robbery. His girlfriend said he was with her all morning and that the incident was a setup by the store in retaliation for a complaint she filed. Petty faces one count of second-degree aggravated robbery and a second count of simple robbery. Now, why? Oh, why? Would you go to rob a store your girlfriend works at, forget to put on your mask, and later keep a crumpled envelope in your pocket with the word robbery on it? One reason, and one reason only. You're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0490. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0490. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder, and don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, or you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Revolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes, streaming on Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Today's broadcast could be heard directly in your home, car, or wireless device, or on your computer, so you can listen on an outpatient basis. For those of you hearing this show directly inside your head, please adjust your medication.